food business in the country will be very, very big. We have enough examples of American QSRs coming to India and becoming big. Not many examples of Indian companies becoming multi-thousand companies, 1,000 crore companies, but it will happen, and it's happening as we speak.
Welcome to Millionaire Mondays, the show where we bring you the stories of real Indian startups told by the entrepreneurs that built them. I'm Caleb Friesen, and on the show today, how Ankit Nagori took EatFit, a single brand under his company ColdFit, and spun it out into a house of brands and one of the largest cloud kitchen companies in India, Cure Foods. When it comes to India, home-cooked food reigns supreme. With a rich culinary history and countless dishes to enjoy, it's really no surprise that historically, most Indians chose to eat something made in their kitchen rather than something made in a cloud kitchen. But with the rise of food delivery apps like Swiggy and Zomato in the 2010s and cloud kitchen companies like Rebel Foods and Eat Club more recently, Indians are becoming more and more comfortable with the convenience of ordering in from food brands. And this is where Cure Foods comes into the picture. In its current avatar, Cure Foods began in 2020, but its founder and my guest today, Ankit Nagori, had been practicing the art of entrepreneurship long before that. Ankit got his start building an online community called YouthPad with the tagline, Have Your Say. The website's goal was to bring together the youth of Delhi NCR onto a common platform, and he ran this platform from 2007 until 2010 when he got a job working at Flipkart. By 2015, Ankit had proven himself to be a formidable intrapreneur and was promoted to the position of chief business officer, and everything seemed to be going well for Ankit. But in 2016, after more than 6 years at the company, he left and teamed up with Mukesh Bansal, Flipkart's head of commerce and advertising, to build CureFit. And over the next 4 years, CureFit evolved into India's leading health and fitness startup. They acquired numerous gyms across the country, worked with celebrities like Hrithik Roshan, and launched a health food brand called EatFit. And this is where the story takes an interesting twist, because while he didn't know it at the time, EatFit would end up becoming Ankit Nagori's entire focus in years to come.
You can't just find one vertical in health and think that consumers will make it really big. While gyms, of course, with Cult, they're a large category and a very large brand now, we figured that customers may really need more services, not just fitness, but mental wellness, healthy food, etc. In fact, a largest TAM, you know, for the health category could actually be health food. Which it's played out that way. So, if you look at the way, you know, we started the Cult business and we figured that the customers are leading a very healthy life because of the fitness, but if they also had better food, it would like really compound. That's when we figured that we need to build a marketplace of health restaurants on the app, while customers can book their Cult classes, gym classes, but they can also order the healthy meals. And I think within first 4 weeks, we figured that there will be no easy way of building this marketplace. There is no supply. Like even today, you know, EatFit is now a 5-6 years old brand. I can't think of a number two brand where you can order meals at scale. Of course, there would be salad bars here and there. We all have our own favorite health parlors, health food parlors, but we don't know where to order it sustainably in multiple cities. So in 2017, when we decided not to do the marketplace and really, build a first party service or our own label or a brand, that's when we figured that food is a really, really tough category. The fact that the food is such a tough category, there's a moat around it, you know, for all businesses. And we figured that there were a bunch of businesses which were doing some decent work, very small scale, but in their own catchment, there was a product market fit. And that, was the reason why we acquired a couple of these companies. We got the chefs on board. As a result of that, these were more like acqui-hires, I would say, because finding the right team, right ethos, some product market fit, some customer love is tough. And that's how EatFit started. So while Cure Foods is a much larger acquisition platform, and we'll talk about it, I'm guessing, during the conversation, EatFit for us, it was just acqui-hire, a way to get a starting team to build the food business. And from there on, it was the tough yards. For the next 3 years, we built a very, very large meal subscription business. EatFit in its first avatar was a meal subscription business largely. And in the second avatar, it's a lot more. And the target customers were the cult customers. Cult customers who were eating healthy, living healthy life because of cult, now could eat healthy because at their offices, at their homes, they could subscribe to eat fit meal, salad, whatnot. The biggest challenge which we saw for the customers was the office meals, you know, once you've worked out and everything. But when you go to office and see that same old spread, that's where you lose all your focus and then you order in all kind of things. So we saw a major traction there. And that's how Eat Fit became a popular name.
Yeah. So in the beginning of Eat Fit, was it something that was accessible to everybody? It was purely CureFit customers.
We started off in a very, very controlled manner. We started off with only certain PIN codes. And within those PIN codes also only certain customers. It was available only for cult customers, that too only in big office addresses. In Bangalore, we have many of those. And slowly we kept opening it up. You could not even order a single meal for the first many months. You could only subscribe to it because we're just trying to build the whole habit. You're trying to see whether customers like our food or not. And by 2018-19, it was available on third-party platforms like Zomato and Swiggy as well. So,
was it smooth sailing pretty much from the beginning, or were there some growing pains as you're kind of doing these experiments, one office, another office? Yes. What were some of the learnings along the way that, you know, maybe let's not do it that way and let's do it this way instead?
Right. I think building any business has a ton of, you know, growing pains. It's just the most difficult thing to do in life. You know, just starting a company, building a business, it's just very, very tough. Eat Fit was no different. And Eat Fit had its own challenges. I think for customers, we started off as a very, very healthy meal brand. So our spread would look like smoothies, salads, very healthy sandwiches. And we figured that's not how an average Indian eats. Even if you're a gym goer.
Or an average person, really.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at a gym goer, even if that person needs protein, they'll probably eat a lot of tandoori chicken, you know, and a lot of grilled paneer, you know, and that's how it is done. So we figured that if Eat Fit has to be a big brand, it has to have a lot of food which people eat every day. And that's how the TAM will become big. So what we did was just take the regular meal and make incremental improvements. So make roti a high fiber roti. Add more protein, add more greens, add more seeds to the meal so that there's better balance, more satiety, and in general, lower calories per gram. So, yeah.
That makes sense. And I think that's how it's evolved to, you know, being Canadian and seeing the story unfold in the West, which probably happened a little bit earlier. We saw how probably it started off with these purists and, you know, it's like fully raw or it's paleo or it's like hardcore, right?
Yeah.
But then as the market starts to grow, you kind of have to find healthy products that everybody enjoys, right? And so then you can pick up some things that are sort of like the healthy version of something that was originally unhealthy. So it sounds like that's the approach.
And, you know, to extend that logic, we also ended up doing multi-grain pizzas, ragi pizzas, because we can't stop people from eating a pizza. But if they may eat a pizza, they could access a one without maida or, you know, without refined flour. So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so you start to expand the scope. It goes from being subscription only to now you can order on these food delivery platforms. Was there also at that early point, were you thinking about offline dine-in locations as
well? Yes, we did. So in the second half of 2019, we opened 10 locations because we figured that not all occasions are ordering in occasions. There are a lot of social occasions where people step out. Whenever you're in a group, you would not order 10 items in a group. You'll rather go out. And again, we took the same strategy. We opened about 10 locations between Bangalore and Hyderabad, all near office locations. And we tried to make it the de facto office lunch place, you know, where people can come in and pick up their own platter and self-serve, etc. It was beginning to do very well. And then, of course, the pandemic happened and the offline went for a toss. But we knew that this category is offline first. We tried to make it online. And thanks to Swiggy, Zomato's of the world, the whole behavior has changed drastically. But you can't take away the fact that 80% of the category still is offline. And out of the 28 eating occasions, I talk about it a lot. You know, there are 28 eating occasions a week, 4 times a day and 7 times a week. And you just can't expect everyone to order in for all of those slots. For Friday evening to Sunday night, probably everyone is just eating out. They're not ordering in. And likewise, you know, dinners are much lower eating, dining in versus office lunches. Now, in office lunches, a lot of people are ordering in, just get your meal at the desk, finish it off, etc. But then there are occasions of team lunches, etc. So I do believe that for any brand to build a large business, you have to have some component of offline. We are a digital first brand, we'll continue to be that. But I believe that offline is super important.
So at that time, sort of the time period between 2016 and 2020, you're wearing a lot of different hats, right? Yes. Because yeah, you're building Eat Fit, but you're also building Cure Fit, right? Yeah. Which would evolve into Cult Fit rebrand yes. later on. So you're doing a lot of different stuff, but now you're completely focused on Cure Foods. So I'm curious to know, during that time period, did you have sort of an idea that maybe at some point I'm going to focus entirely on this food business?
Right.
Or was that nowhere in your mind?
Right. So, Caleb, very often, you know, even when you're running a large portfolio of business, you end up finding finding areas where you're more deeply involved and more passionate about. While CureFit, of course, was an overall business that Mukesh and I were running, and there were a bunch of things happening on the Cult side, which were really, really awesome, because Cult became this really big brand that it is today. And EatFit was also evolving slower than Cult, but steadily into a pretty big brand. And while we were figuring out how to really make EatFit bigger, etc., pandemic happened. And that's where, you know, we had to answer a lot of tough questions. The tough questions were around the future of the overall business, given the nature of the businesses that we had. We had a lot of in-person business because of the gym business. And of course, food business also was not easy. In fact, during the period of the first 3 months of pandemic, while it seems that Cloud Kitchen would have been the best thing to do, the ease of operations was very, very tough. Every city had its own rules. Even if it was called an essential service, many a times the police guys would just detain our delivery boys for no reason, because there was no clarity on the ground. So, and we had to have excess staff, etc. So it was a very tough moment, and the business was bleeding because the volumes had gone down, the offices had shut down. That's where 70% of our subscriptions were from.
Yeah.
The B2C subscriptions from offices was a very large part, because if a company has 1,000 people, 100, 200, 300 were subscribing to Eat Fit Meal. So we had tough questions to answer. So one logical choice seemed that, you know, we double down and focus only on one part of the business. Or the second answer could have been, which we eventually took, is to double down on each business in an independent way. And that's the call we took. We said, okay, Eat Fit has a good starting point now, and it can become a multi-year journey. So I, given my affinity towards that business, and also the fact that I really truly believe that food business in the country will be very, very big. We have enough examples of American QSRs coming to India and becoming big. Not many examples of Indian companies becoming multi-thousand companies, 1,000 crore companies, but it will happen, and it's happening as we speak. So that's where, you know, during the pandemic, you know, we sat down, figured out, you know, that there can be two parallel journeys. One is Cult, one is Eat Fit. Both companies have done well, and both companies have an opportunity. Both brands have done well, and both brands have an opportunity to become very big. And we chalked out the independent paths, and that's where Cure Foods came into being, which is the holding company where the first brand that we acquired was Eat Fit. We acquired that brand from Cult. And that was the business that we embarked the journey on. So I think I'm not surprised that I'm spending all my time on Eat Fit now, because during the Cult days also, I think my inclination was towards the food business. That's where I was totally in control. And I think it's eventually panned out pretty well.
Yeah. But the pandemic was a really difficult time yes. for Eat Fit. I know. Went from around 55 to 60 restaurants across multiple cities, yes. as you said, where there's different rules in every city, yes. down to about, I think 15 was yes. like the lowest that you guys reached.
Yes.
And I just have to, I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes, because yes, I understand, you know, you probably had this affinity towards Eat Fit, and maybe you're excited for a new chapter, a change, but also this is now a struggling business, right? And now you're kind of in charge of that struggling business exclusively, right?
Yes.
This is now your entire focus, which is really difficult. But you actually, rather than sort of... And the other thing, too, that I think is really interesting is that there were sort of two directions that you guys could have gone. You could have said temporarily, let's run these as two different sort of entities or whatever. You know, Ankit, you handle this, and Mukesh, I'll handle this. And then later on, once the pandemic is over, we'll bring it back. But instead, it was like this was a clear sort of division, like, no, we're going in two different directions here. And you actually increased your stake. I believe you had 7.6% of Eat Fit at one point, and then you actually doubled down and were like, no, I'm going to focus on this full time. I don't know. Just walk me through the thought process. I want to know, what were you thinking in that moment? What was going through your head, and how are you feeling?
Right. So probably I'll just talk about this whole food business in itself, like why I thought food will be a large business and why Cure Foods is built the way it is and why we could not have taken a temporary decision and a longer decision. I think the last question is the easiest. We figured that food will be a very large business in the country. I had a lot of belief in that. So did the other board members at CureFit, just that it was about prioritization at that point of time. And some of the other core board members in CureFit have ended up becoming Cure board members here. And, Cult still holds some stake in the company. So there's never been a lack of belief on whether this business will be big or not. Why it could not be part of the CureFit chapter itself, because the nature of the business, we're not a healthy food platform anymore. Only 50% of our revenue comes from healthy food now, which is still probably oversized, because for any other food group, it'll be 10%. So if we have to be really large, probably health food will become 30% of our business and other categories will grow faster. So the biggest point which we realized during pandemic was that people were no longer looking for healthier homemade food. During pandemic, they were looking for junk food. They were looking for food which is entertainment.
Comfort.
Yeah. Comfort. Yeah, I think more than comfort, entertainment. Because that was the only thing. I don't know which part of the world were you in during the pandemic, but in Bangalore, the only thing you could do was to, call a friend over and or watch a game over a pizza. Games were also not there. Watch a movie over the pizza. And that's what, a lot of small pizza, biryani, sandwich, smoothies, ice cream brands sprung up during that period. And a lot of enterprising people made businesses out of it. Pizza Bakery, beautiful business, I think, is a pandemic scale-up company. So I think we figured that if we have to make a big business, we had conviction about Cloud Kitchen. We had conviction about a bunch of things. But if we have to make a really large business, we have to go multi-category. Also because, like I spoke about, 28 meal slots a week. How many times can you eat a healthy Indian meal? Probably 14 out of 28, 50%. But at least three times you'll just eat junk food. You'll have breakfast, you'll have smoothies, you'll have a lot of other things. So you need to have multiple brands. One other big clear understanding, and thanks to Rebel Foods proving it really well, is that one brand can't cater across 28 meal slots or 10 cuisines. You got to have different brands. So we had the infrastructure of Cloud Kitchens. Of course, it went down from a large number to 15 and now back to 250. It is five times pre-pandemic. I think the big learning there was that someone has to double down. Someone has to take that risk. And I was passionate enough, and the risk has paid off. I could have looked very stupid in the hindsight. But I'm lucky and happy that the risk has paid out. And now we are a pretty large company doing 2x volumes from the pandemic, 4x volume, 2x revenue, 4x volumes. We've gone more mass with our product, and which is what the evolution of EatFit has been. EatFit from being a super premium salad brand to a super premium thali brand is now a very accessible Indian meals brand, where you can order an Indian platter for $149, $169, $199, where it's just dal, roti, sabzi, chawal, that kind of food. And so once we decided to, start a new company and acquire EatFit, it was very clear that with the 15, or it's not even 15 kitchens, it was 12 kitchens. The 12 kitchens, we have to build multiple brands there. And that's where some of our previous DNA of acquiring people and being able to work with multiple people. Not only EatFit, even Cult was built that way. The first 3-4 gyms all came from acquisitions or acquiring. So we thought it'll be great to, build our own products and labels. But I think building a brand, especially in the food world, is very, very tough. You have to create products. You have to be a product market fit. Then there has to be a brand market fit, because, you can get the same rajma chawal from two brands. One is called A and one is called B, but people will prefer calling it from B because it just sounds sexier, better
it's the packaging. Branding, yeah.
Yeah, so it's the branding. So you first create a product, then get a brand, and then get ratings and reviews. So we figured, and thanks to pandemic, a lot of cloud kitchens were springing up. And we figured that it's the best time to acquire a couple of categories. So we said we need to have pizza and we need to have biryani if you need to build a large business. So using the capital that we had, and using the swap that we did, we had some resources. And I had decided that I'll be doubling down anyways and putting in more capital. But before that, I said, let's have a business model fit. The business model fit is multiple brands in one kitchen and one central kitchen. So we had one central kitchen, 12 kitchens, and we acquire two brands. One is Aligarh House Biryani and second is Yum Lane. And we saw, and the aim was that these 12 kitchens should start becoming profitable. We should see enough volume. They're all in Bangalore and Coimbatore. So two cities. And we said, okay, if these kitchens can become profitable and the ratings are good and, you know, the business model proves that, you know, in one kitchen, you can serve three brands equally and not like co-working space where the three make stations. It has to be one single line. Otherwise, it's not a cloud kitchen. It's just a back-ended food court where the order comes and you're giving it in every station. The real, real fun of running a cloud kitchen is that it's a single line. And when an order comes, you just think of it like an assembly line. So we built that. We built that tech and reused some of the old tech and figured out a way to run these 12 kitchens. Within 5 months, the business is profitable.
Profitability is hugely important for restaurant businesses. And if you're a restaurant owner watching this video, then you know that intuitively. But in spite of that, a lot of restaurants still struggle to generate profits because the margins in this sector are razor thin. You might pay 150 rupees for a dish's ingredients and sell that same dish for 300 rupees, but after rent and staff salaries and utility bills, your margin might only be 50 to 100 rupees on that customer. And that's where this video sponsor Explorex comes into the picture, because they've got this feature on their operating system for restaurants called Bridge, which gives you reports on the financial performance of your restaurant business. And this is a really powerful tool because it actually gives you suggestions on how you can improve your restaurant's financial performance. So, for example, you can see which dishes on your menu are being ordered the most, which items are the most profitable, and also which items are the fastest to produce, so you can customize the position of those items on your menu, thereby increasing revenue and operational efficiency in the kitchen. And on the flip side, if an item isn't performing on the menu, then you as a restaurant owner can take action to resolve that issue. For example, using Bridge's inventory management tools, you could actually limit ingredient procurement for that specific item to mitigate wastage. And this extends to online food delivery menus too. So if you're selling food on Swiggy and Zomato, then Explorex's partner reports can help you identify which platform to invest more of your marketing budget into based on which app your restaurant is seeing more traction on, their average ticket sizes, order timings, and several other factors. And all of this, of course, comes with a full suite of tools like POS, reservation management, billing, inventory management, payments, and much, much more in a single package. So if you want to learn more about Explorex and their operating system for restaurants, Bridge, then click on the link in the description down below. And now, on with the podcast.
4 months after we launched Cure Foods in the new avatar was the wave two. That helped the business, to be honest, but it was super tough. Every team member, including me and my every team member got COVID in that period. And we had one unfortunate incident as well where one of our team members passed away. So the morale was not the best, but the volumes were high and all kinds of things. So it wasn't tough. But by the time the second wave got over, we were profitable. We were making money. And I owned like a majority stake in the company. So there were two directions that I could have taken, and I don't know which is the right direction. One is to build that business sustainably and, you know, make profits every month, which, you know, we as the founding team members can pocket. Or now think of it as a multi-city business. Given our love for scale, given the opportunity that we had, we raised Series A and we went to the market, raised Series A.
That was 13 million.
We raised Series A and went to our older friends. And of course, Iron Pillar was a new partner in the business, and they are the largest stakeholder in the company. And they loved the idea of this multi-brand thing, etc. And by then, I had not heard of Thrasio. So many people say that, oh, you were copying the Thrasio model. No, I was copying the Unilever or the Devyani Foods or Rebel, if at all, you know, this like single kitchen. But that's how it's done. It's not copying there. Like if you have one manufacturing facility, you would rather create more products out of it. This question comes very often, like, oh, Ankit, you're running 12 brands. I say, no, we're running 4 or 5 brands. Everything else is just labels or experiments. So we'll talk about our brands probably, but so that's where we raised our Series A, and then we acquired a really large brand. We wanted to, like, until then, these were small acqui-hire / small deals, you know. These were giving 20% extra revenue, but we wanted to get 50% extra revenue, and that's where Cake Zone came into being. That's our second largest brand today after Eat Fit, doing crazy numbers. We're in 25 cities with Cake Zone now, and that, I think, was true integration coming into play, and we saw the way the business can grow. And between Series A and Series B, it was just a 4 month gap, and also it was the heydays of 2021, you know, in terms of fundraise, and we were able to raise a pretty large round. And that's when we did our biggest acquisition till date. It's Mavericks. It had three brands, Great Indian Khichdi, Home Plate, and Canteen Central. And we've shut down Canteen Central because it was a very small brand then. They have only two scaled up brands. And that completed our first set of journey. So with Series A and Series B, we were now in 7-8 cities. We had set up more central kitchens. And business was good.
When you approach one of these brands, yes. And they've spent, you know, they've spent a long time building these. They've poured their blood, sweat, and tears into them. Yes. Is it just a numbers conversation, or is it more difficult than that? And also, are there brands that you've approached and said, hey, we want to buy you? And they're like, actually, no, we want to keep building on our own.
Right. So for us to approach a brand, the biggest thing was the love for the product. Whether customers love the product or not. Otherwise, food, you can't just sell a below average or even average product and expect the business to compound. People will get fed up and leave. So the biggest parameter was that. Second was whether the brand is online or offline in DNA. During pandemic, most brands became online first, but we also know of brands who could not do a great job of being an online first brand. So we wanted the brand to have online DNA. And the most important thing was the ability to integrate the brand back into our supply chain. There are very different supply chains that people run in food. Some people are fully fresh. Some people are chilled. Some people are frozen. We are a hybrid between fresh and chilled. So 60% of the work gets done in central kitchens, gets sent to our dark kitchens twice a day, once a day, depending on the category. And the finishing is done in the last mile. So what 60% is chilled, 40% is fresh. And I think that's the best one can achieve in terms of freshness, etc. And best in class food principles, etc. But a lot of brands are frozen first. By the way, I want to make it very clear. Frozen food is not bad food. It's preserved frozen. It does not mean that it was cooked frozen. It's cooked and then blast frozen to preserve the freshness. And many people argue that frozen food is probably better than chilled and fresh because it's flash frozen and it's there. So I'm not trying to call out frozen food as bad food here. So, but we don't typically acquire brands which are fully frozen because then it's a different supply chain. Our vehicles are chilled and ambient. We don't have frozen vehicles. So there are a bunch of things that you have to take care of when you're integrating companies or integrating businesses. So all of these things also came into picture. But more importantly, when we were acquiring all of these businesses, we were very, very keen to get the entrepreneur on board because it's their expertise, it's their DNA that the brand represents. And because in most cases, the entrepreneur is the culinary guy or the culinary expert. So we don't want to lose that. And we had deals where we wanted to make sure these experts stay with us. And in many cases, they did. And we've seen the results. So, yeah.
So it's usually an acqui-hire model.
It's an acquisition model where we significantly incentivize the entrepreneur to stay on board. So
it's not just you, of course. You're not just going out there on a bike or in a car and looking and spotting restaurants and walking in and saying, hey, I want to buy you. Right, you actually have a team of people that are identifying these opportunities. So tell me a little bit about Cure Food, apart from Ankit Nagore.
Right, so when we founded Cure Foods in 2020, when we started this new journey, there was a core team which we acquired from Cult, right? And the core team is the team which still runs the business. They are the key actors in this whole story. And the business head is Gokul. He was with Cult and then is now runs the entire business. He's the chief business officer at Cure Foods. And he's the person in charge of running the business day to day. Then we have Rahul, Dilip, Bhaskar, who also were part of the team from day zero. They came in when we had no clarity whether we will even survive this experiment, because like I said, the 12 kitchens plus the three brands was just an experiment. We had some capital and we didn't want to raise more until there was clarity on this business model fit. So all of them worked with a lot of ambiguity, sailed through a lot of ambiguity and with a team which was very small. I think we were punching way above our weight. And I think that team has stuck through and I'm hoping that they will continue to run the business for many, many years. So it's a very interesting formula. While I don't have a co-founder in place, my co-founders, my core founding team members are there who run different parts of business. They're very fungible. They're typically internal entrepreneurs or EIRs, if I may, and they pick up different challenges every year and solve tough problems. And now, of course, we have a much larger team in place. It's like a full corporate structure, but still we've tried to go very, very lightweight. We've tried to hire people who are super passionate about building a business profitably. We're hoping to turn profitable this year and plan to go public in the next 2 to 3 years if things go well. But the aim has been very clear. We have to build a profitable business. Hence, a large part of team works on a very small salary. Because for them, ESOPs is the way to monetize it for future. We were lucky enough to do an ESOP buyback last year, and hopefully we'll do one next year as well. And then, of course, there'll be IPO and many such opportunities. But the team which is working with me right now is not like a typical senior leadership team where compensation is as important as the passion. I'm sure in many startups that's the case, but I've seen all kinds of startups. But here it's very clear that the leadership team here is working because for 2-3 reasons. One, we started off, when we started off this new chapter, we were very clear that we build a profitable business. So we didn't know which business model will we go after. We said we will be in food business and a profitable business. So that's the passion statement. Then of course, it evolved into these brands and these cities. The second thing is, given that the tough times that we saw together, you know, the paucity of resources and ambiguity and the way things were, I don't think, you know, either of us will or any of us will forget that part and, you know, take any hasty decision of doing something new, something wild, something crazy. I think there is too much of an attachment here with the business. And then, of course, there's the last part of them also seeing this as their own company now because they have ownership, they have built the piece from everything. So I think and I'm only talking about top team. Then there are, you know, people who came along in the journey very, very early days. People who joined the company in the first 4 months when it was not sexy, it seemed like an experiment. People were super circumspect about the chances of this experiment to succeed. A bunch of people joined us, you know, and Pradeep, Anurag, Sabrish, of course, was from day one there. I think all of them have now evolved into such strong leaders purely because I think they've, you know, seen really, really tough times and hyper growth, you know, from going down to 1,000 orders a day to now, you know, back to being 60,000 orders a day, which is almost 2x of pre-pandemic number. I really believe that, you know, things have been tough, but it's also, you know, created characters out of everyone. And I hope and I feel that these people whom I mentioned will continue to run the business for many, many years to come.
Yeah. So this, you mentioned this sort of frugality philosophy that's throughout the company. And I think probably it's also partially born out of circumstance and timing, yes. Right? You guys, the company kind of took shape during the pandemic. Yes. And then, yes, there was this sort of surge where everybody was raising funds and the market was going yes. crazy. And then now we're in this sort of funding winter.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense, right? With all that volatility that you guys would maybe be a frugal company, play it safe. But I also think it could be challenging, right, to hire people if salaries are maybe like a little bit lower, right? So I'm curious to know, what is it about Cure Foods that, apart from money, right, a lot of companies just hire because they're throwing around money and people want money, right? So they join the company. Whereas you guys seem to be hiring with some other incentive, right? Is it you? Are people inspired by you? Or is it the business? People love to be a part of this company. Tell me how you guys incentivize people to join.
Right. I think if I'll be super candid, I think the first conversation, the trigger could be, you know, it's my company and I'm an ex-entrepreneur and built a couple of brands in the past. So I think getting the first conversation is probably easier. Or I would say we don't work with a hiring agency. If we have to hire the 5-6 people I mentioned, we just put it out on LinkedIn saying that we're looking for this role. And we get a lot of inbound.
You'll get like DMs from people.
Yeah, a lot of inbound. I think we lose 50% candidates where we mention the salaries because we pay at least 20 to 30% lower than the market. And that's become our DNA. And what that has done, Caleb, is that we are now hiring much younger people. We're hiring much younger people and we are hiring very diverse people. In my previous 2 stints, which was at Cult and Flipkart, I think what worked really well for us was hiring these really smart MBA grads, hiring these really smart engineering grads. In engineering, our philosophy was to hire at the best. We thought that, you know, why don't we just look for some diversity? People who have failed as an entrepreneur. So our head of engineering, Pradeep, is someone, you know, who's an ex-entrepreneur, did not succeed, and now he has the hunger to become successful. And he sees Cure Foods as his own company. He has ownership in the company, but also he's seen it grow from, like I said, 1,000 orders back to 60,000 orders that we do today. So I feel that, you know, there is, we've discovered a completely different set of people. And when they come to interview with us, half of them drop off because of the salary, 25% people drop off for some other reason. But I think the 25% people who remain in the pool, I think they get inspired by the genuinity of the people whom they talk to. It's like very humble, genuine people just trying to do well at what they work on, you know. And that's the DNA. DNA is like frugality, honesty, super hardworking, grounded people. And everyone is in trenches. Everyone, you know, takes all kinds of tasks. And when we have to zoom out, we're also able to do that, at least thus far, where we can build a large strategic choice basis, whatever data we have. But also, it's just been a month shy of 3 years. It's just been 2 years, 11 months. We started in October 2020. And I feel that a lot more things will get uncovered on the people side. But right now, the emerging DNA, which we are known for, is frugality, humility, hard work, just sincerity, you know. And those kind of people are getting attracted. I do believe that we may see a slightly more churn on the lower level or entry level jobs because we are playing just the entry level salaries. But I am very confident that even when they move on, they will take a lot of these values with them, which will be very super, like very, very beneficial for them. And I'm sure a bunch of them will keep coming back when their financial goals are getting met by what we have to offer.
Okay, so coming back to the business now, you kind of talked about at one point in 2020 how the path wasn't exactly clear, right? You didn't know that Cure Foods would evolve in the direction that it did.
Yes.
And I think still to this day, it's actually quite interesting that you guys are doing multiple things. So yeah, you've got the cloud kitchen model, which I think the assembly line is sort of the way that you make things run efficiently, which is really cool. And there's a lot of different brands, but that's more of the customer side, right? Internally, like you said, there's maybe actually just like a couple of different kitchens.
Yes.
But then there's also two other things. One is sort of offline, right? And there are a couple of offline locations from the brands that you've acquired. And then also you have this sort of, the only way that I can think of it is kind of like an Amazon Prime platform. I don't know. It's like Eat Fit, right? But there's a subscription model in a way. Where I guess people can get gain access to discounts and special perks.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about business strategy and sort of these different verticals.
Right. So I may say that there are four business units, if I can think of, different sizes. 75% revenue comes from our cloud kitchen business. Like I said, 250 cloud kitchens in the country now, servicing over 60 or 18 cities. I will leave out the last seven where we just have one kitchen right now. So otherwise we're in present 25 cities, but 18 cities with meaningful presence and minimum brands per store being four. I think if I talk about our brands in cloud kitchen, Eat Fit, Cake Zone are the two largest brands. I think they are 60% of our cloud kitchen volumes. And then we have a long tail of brands, of course, not long tail of revenue, but some of those brands are offline first. So I'll talk about them. But then we have Sharif Bhai, Nomad, Pizza, Frozen Bottle, which are the next three brands in terms of cloud kitchen volume. So I think these five brands take up 80% of our cloud kitchen volumes. Like I said, it's an assembly line where a lot of work gets done in the central kitchen. Food is sent to the cloud kitchens and a lot of cloud kitchens, you know, just service the order as and when they come. The person in the kitchen may or may not know which brand are they making it for, because they're building, they're cooking for a recipe and a product, which is then shipped out later in the respective brand's boxes. That's the first business. The second business is the subscription business, which was pretty big during Eat Fit, Cult Fit days. And now it's a much smaller part of the business, about 5 to 8% business. But I feel it's a business for the future. I genuinely believe that, you know, people in future will cook much lesser. And the subscription business is almost like outsourcing your daily food. So we have about 7,000-8,000 subscribers every day who subscribe. So even at 7,000, we're a pretty meaningful subscription platform. But given that other value volumes are so big, we're not able to like do a lot of justice to this vertical yet. We are trying to beef up the team. Belief there is to build something like Amazon Prime, where you can customize, subscribe, two meals a day, one meal a day, etc. It is like a 7/10 product right now. We are improving it as we speak. I believe that in a 10-year time frame, it will be like a top 20 percentile of our customers will be there. Even today, all our super users sit there. Some of the customers order like 30 meals a month. Some of them order 50 meals a month. So that's almost 10x of the overall platform average. So that's the second business. I believe that there will be a time when people really don't cook at home. And it's pretty possible. See, cooking at home is very, very tough. And you have, like, if you're living in a 1,000 square feet house, you're actually earmarking 10% of your space for a place where you're only spending like 5% of your time in the day. Then you have to get raw materials every day. You have to get a cook every day, or you have to take time to cook.
Then it's more of your time. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm saying it's just super tough. It's like very, very unproductive, but of course it has to be done because there is no credible healthy food platform out there right now. And I believe that EatFit subscriptions has a chance to become that.
Have you heard of Soylent?
I have heard of it, of course.
I was one of those subscribers. Okay. So I would have Soylent delivered to me. And
but that was the meal replacement. It's not like a proper meal.
And it was like I just loved it because I didn't have to worry about cooking, but I also didn't have to worry about even like eating. You know, it's like it's done in like, you know, 5 seconds. But it's a little extreme, I know. Probably Indian people love their food, so that might not be
so
the route.
So our largest selling product in our subscription is, like I said, the Indian three-compartment platter. Dal, roti, sabzi. That's it.
That's what I used to eat from EatFit during the pandemic was the veg dali.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. It's no-brainer. Like sometimes you may get food fatigue, but whenever my team says that customers have food fatigue, I ask them the same question. At home, I grew up with like 5 dishes. So maybe it's different when you're ordering in, but yeah. The third vertical is the restaurants. Earlier, it was just an ancillary business because we acquired a couple through acquisitions. But then Sharif Bhai Biryani, which is our largest biryani brand and is amongst the top 5 biryani brands in the country now, it's scaled really well. We figured that biryani is an occasion, especially in the southern part of the country. And people eat out biryani as a family outing. They eat out as a celebration, team outings, whatnot. So we set up a couple of locations last year and they just went berserk. And since then, we opened 20 more locations across Karnataka and Tamil Nadu. And they're all doing really well.
Offline
dine-in locations. And we believe that for biryani category is there. One new format that we're experimenting and we're very, very happy with the success is the Nomad Pizza. So Nomad is our really luxury, from a price point, really luxury pizza. It's a 1,200 rupee product.
And you have a nice, really nice location in Indiranagar.
Yes, so we have four or five of them now across Delhi, Bombay, Bangalore. And it's not going to be a large strategy. It's more like a marketing strategy for Nomad brand because when people go on Swiggy and Zomato and see a 1,200 rupee pizza, they're like, oh my God, like, what is it? And then now they can correlate to that store that it's representing. So that's the third business, scaling well. The fourth vertical is where we are spending a lot of time now. And we know that Cloud Kitchen is steadily growing, but I don't expect it to grow 4x in next 10 years. I think it will be like a 3x in 10 years. And from there on, just stable. Because internet ordering is not going to be a 100-city phenomena. It will be a 50-city phenomena. And India has 250, 300 towns with meaningful population. So how do we cater to the last 200? Sharif Bhai Biryani, of course, can go to probably 50, 75 of those. But it's a very South Indian flavored biryani. It may not cater to North India. And we don't want to change the taste. It is very, very genuine, whatever it is.
I love how much variety there is in the biryani space.
Yes. Seriously. Every state has 3 to 4 biryanis. Not like, so Karnataka alone has 4 different variants. You know. So what we are now experimenting is a small takeaway or a dine-in format. Like Subway, like a smaller cafe coffee day, etc. And we're trying 2-3 different categories there with different brand names. They're all experiments right now. We have a bakery, you know, which is like a cake zone store where you can just get a loaf of bread and some baked items and muffins and teacups and all of that. So that's one format that we're trying. We have a few stores in Chennai and Bangalore doing okay. Then we're trying the HRX format, you know, which is an online brand for us. It's a EatFit subscription category.
But yeah, it's also on your subscription platform as well.
Yes, but we are trying to unbundle it and bring it offline. The first store is here in HSR. It's being inaugurated by Hrithik Roshan today, incidentally. And we believe that it has legs. But again, I feel that it's definitely not an answer for the last 200 cities because healthy eating may not be the answer. We have chanced upon one product and seems to be doing well now. We have expanded to 25 of those outlets, is rolls and wraps. I think for some reason, there is no scaled up rolls and wraps player in the country. We have burgers, pizzas, chicken, Chinese now with Wow, etc. But no scaled up rolls player. It's almost like Indian meal in a single hand, right? A single hand thing. And it can be a sloppy roll with gravy or just dry roll with cutlets or whatever. So we're experimenting that, 25 outlets in Bangalore, extraordinary results. If that becomes big, or it has to become big for us to cater to the next 100 cities. Otherwise, we are cooped into this 30 to 50 city business, which itself will be pretty big. Like right now, I said we're doing 60,000 orders. I believe that in these cities, we can do 200,000 orders. But then from there on, we will probably just grow 10%, 20%. But if you have to continue this 50 to 70% growth, we need some growth vectors for the tier three cities and beyond.
That's what I want to know about now. Yes. Because I think there's, you know, a lot of these brands, oftentimes there's two approaches, right? You can expand outward or you can expand inward, right? Yeah. Go deeper into tier three.
Yes.
And as they say, like the next 500 million, whatever, right? Yes. Their first sort of order and experience.
Yes.
From their mobile device, which they maybe just got, right?
Yes.
People are still getting online here in India and discovering platforms like
Yes.
Cure Foods.
Yes.
So I'm curious to know, is that, like first of all, what's the strategy there? Because I think you have to think about that very differently.
Yes.
And then also, is there scope for outward expansion, maybe going outside of India? I don't know.
Yes. I think for each of the business verticals, there's very clear clarity. I think Cloud Kitchens will be an India-centric business. Right now, like I said, we have meaningful presence in 18 cities. It can grow to 30 cities. So we'll grow the number of cities and each city can go deeper. For example, in Bangalore, we have 25 cloud kitchens. I think at peak, we may have 40. Likewise for every other city. So the footprint will double from the 250 to 500 in the next 3 to 5 years. So, and with inflation, etc., the revenue will probably grow 2.5x. That's pretty meaningful for that vertical. Subscriptions, I think, will go deeper only in the top 6 cities, wherever there are offices, where there's thousands of people sitting in one office. And that's a very profitable business for us, because if 10 people are ordering on the same subscription slot, which is 12:30 to 1 or 1 to 1:30, we deliver 10 boxes together. Delivery cost goes down to a tenth, you know, per order. So there we'll continue to go deeper. It'll be a slow burner, literally, where we think we will not do anything inorganic to push that number. We're doing 7,000-8,000 subscriptions a day. We'll probably get to 25,000 in 5 years. That will make us probably the largest subscription platform in the country across any goods delivered platform, not digital subscription, because where anything is getting delivered daily, you know. So I think there's an opportunity to build it. And a lot of investors and banker friends joke that, you know, we should hype that off and there you'll get a tech multiple and not the food multiple, etc., on valuations. But of course, it's a very core part of our strategy. The third vertical is restaurants. There, I think the size of the restaurants, the nature of the restaurants, the price point, it'll be a top 12 to 15 city play, but with a clear opportunity to go abroad. So we think Sharif Bhai is a brand and product ready to go to UAE. We will start work on it next year and probably launch it in 2025. Also, Nomad Pizza, it's very international. Its flavor, appeal, presence. We may experiment a couple of locations. So that's the only vertical that I'm looking to take international right now. And the fourth one, which is quick service restaurants or takeaways, it has to go to 100 cities. Otherwise, we won't become we will never be a 10,000 crore revenue company. We'll probably be a 5,000 crore revenue company, which also is almost 6x from where we are right now. But as a leader, as a CEO of the company, I have to keep thinking about next 5 to 10 years and not just 3 to 5 years. I think the first three verticals take care of the next 3 to 5 years. But can't get to a point where, you know, we're growing 50% for next 5 years and suddenly we get to a 15-20%. A lot of internet companies, by the way, have hit that. You must have seen, you know, so many companies were growing 30-40-50-60%, and now for the last 2 years, for the funding winter, and second, there are no more internet subscribers who pay meaningful money. And not only did it happen for physical goods, it happened for digital goods. We all know how Netflix has plateaued. We all know post-IPL, how Hotstar numbers have stagnated. So I believe that yesterday, my close friend Lalit, who runs Grow, had written an article for Money Control where, you know, he mentioned a very interesting thing, that while most people now say that, oh, India is a shallow market and the consumers are not that many, Unilever has multiple brands which will be $1 billion brands. One brand is already a $1 billion brand. And now there will be multiple brands which can be there, which means there are customers. Just that you need to figure out the product and the channel for them. So I really believe that if we have to be big, we need to build for the city number 50 to 150. My gut says about 400 million people must be living there. This is my gut. Yeah, I think 250 million people will be living in those 100 cities. And that's the way you have to, cater to those people. Otherwise, it will be a nice business. It will be a profitable business. But if we have to really make a dent, we have to figure that out. And that's where we're trying to create those smaller formats. And the economics are simple. Small formats, so small rental, low manpower, takeaway, so no delivery fees, etc. And price points will be cheaper. I think the menu will be all sub 149. So let's see. So that's the new thing that we are focused on. And we have clearly divided the BU heads in the company and the people who run each of these BUs. There are horizontal functions and then these are BU specific things. Within BUs, there are product managers who are the brand heads. So that's how it's built.
Sounds like the direction that things are moving in, like you said, you could sort of just slow down and maybe not expand the way that you're expecting you will. Be profitable,
yeah.
Be comfortable. But you're moving in this direction of growth. At the same time, though, earlier in the conversation, you talked about how you guys do want to be profitable.
Yes.
And I think that's a key component to eventually giving your investors an exit and going public.
Yeah.
How do you find that balance between growing and also doing it sustainably?
I think the balance lies in the growth rates. I think given my previous experience, given how the Indian ecosystem evolved, I think anything less than 70-80% was frowned upon. 70-80% year-on-year growth was frowned upon, especially in the first 5-6 years of the existence. We've been lucky to grow that number till now, but I don't expect it to stay at that forever. I think this year probably will grow at 70%, next year it'll come down to 60, then 50, then 40. Of course, for a company to be meaningful on a stock market, it has to grow at 30-40%. And that's where we want to stabilize at. And the 30-40% is achieved with 15-20% coming from new locations, 15-20% coming from same store growth. And the same store growth is the one which drives profitability. Same resources, same rental, same electricity. And now you're delivering more orders, which means more profit per order, hence more profitability at the store level. So I think the discipline comes from where you are looking at your growth rates to be. Of course, the time was different when we all needed to deliver 100% because you're raising at crazy valuations. And that's one other thing which I've maintained the discipline. I try and raise at a public market multiple for my company, which actually, luckily for a food industry in India, the public market multiples are insane. Thanks to the wonderful companies with Jubilant, Devyani, Sapphire, Westlife are. So.
Wow. What about you though? So you're like sort of, you've been at this for so long.
Yeah.
I think starting back in Flipkart, right? And there was a lot of entrepreneurship there, right? It wasn't just a desk job. You're actually working really hard building this thing. Then CureFit and then EatFit and now Cure Foods. I mean, you haven't really stopped in a while. Even before that, I think you were building something else, YouthPad, right?
Yes.
So you've just been, is that just part of your DNA or would you like for there to be a point at some point in the not too distant future, maybe 5-10 years or something where you kind of slow down?
Right. I think, I remember saying this in one of the other conversations I was having, that I think entrepreneurship is a DNA. It's a way of life. What you can do is dial up and dial down the intensity or active involvement or daily rigor. So I'll tell you, at Flipkart, maybe I was like 10 on 10 on intensity and daily rigor. Maybe in Cult, that became 9 on 10. Right now, it's at 8 on 10 because I'm actively managing it that way. I don't want to be burnt out in this multi-year journey of entrepreneurship. It's like how an army guy decides to be an army guy, an entrepreneur decides to be an entrepreneur. It's not like I'm doing with an end result of making millions and retiring. No, there is no retirement in near future. And it may never happen, So idea is to keep building. Idea is to find a balance. So I have found a good balance with my own health rituals. I play, I swim, I run, I meditate. So I think that's a very core part. My son is 8 years old now and the best time to, have companionship. So I end up spending time with him. We travel, me, my wife and my son. So I think that balance is very important. I really wish and hope that everyone finds their own balance. That crazy burn period will not sustain for anyone. I've done that for a few years earlier. KeoFit was definitely better than Flipkart, and this is way better. This is more intense in terms of just mental intensity, sometimes high because I'm like, you know, trying to dabble many things together, but physically it's better. And in future, I hope that it just continues to get better as I grow older and I, you know, find more interests. Like, you know, I should be able to balance it out, and no one should have no one should frown upon it, investors or our partners or employees, if we are able to find a good balance, and it is something which does not hamper work or does not hamper the business, then you should have your own time. So I think entrepreneurship will be core part of the DNA. I foresee myself running EatFit for many, many years, because I think the logical conclusion for EatFit is to be stock like Page Industries, Pidi Light, you know, all these brands which have got built in India. While Jockey is not an Indian brand, but you know, it's such a large business in India right now. Pidi Light, which is Fevicol. I think there's an opportunity to just make it a stock which is a natural momentum stock. And as the population grows, as disposable income grows, these stocks keep doing well. So once I found that momentum, I hope I found that moment, find that momentum. And once I find that momentum, I will try and find operators to run the business. I think it's at least 10 years away. And post that also, I have no intention to sell this business now, because I figured at least one thing, that restarting is the toughest part of the journey. So no more of that. But I'm sure I'll find more opportunities to partner with smart entrepreneurs and in a different model. So I don't think I would want to actively start up again, even after 10 years, if I'm giving up an active role or something. I would work on a different model where I identify entrepreneurs, work with them, but not on actively starting up. That is the tough part, and I don't want to go that again.
That was Ankit Nagore, founder of Cure Foods. And by the way, Ankit's son is obviously a big fan of the company that his dad built, but there's one brand in particular that he likes best. Which of all of the Cure Foods brands is your son's favorite?
My son's favorite is the EatFit Kulcha Burger. Kulcha Burger is an innovation where we've taken off the bun, and Indian bread is, you know, there. It's a sloppy burger with gravies and no sauces. So whenever he's allowed to order in, which is like rare, he orders that. And it was his birthday today, so we ordered a Cake Zone cake, and he loved it. So,
wow. Yes. Wish him happy birthday for me.
Yeah, of course I'll do. Yes.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to the podcast this week, and I'll catch you in the next one.